Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Jenny Hubby.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Well, this week, folks, it's what I call the Just Us department. It's just Jenny and I. We get some callers, we'll definitely field them. Otherwise, it's just us. So
you and me, Bruce.
That's it. That's it. It's been a while. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. So to be able to kind of circle the wagons on the show and kind of process and review and luckily we have some material to process and review with our listeners today. And that is this. So Jenny and I recently, as in like last Thursday, right?
Yeah.
We presented at the Youth Adolescent Symposium here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Plano, which is just north of Dallas. And Jenny and I presented on an integrated model of both counseling and coaching for adolescents. And I thought it went real well. I think it was, I think it's one of the first or early forays into this field because our model at least allows for the concurrent, you know, the concurrent utilization of a coach and a counselor in some situations, not all situations, but in many situations, using a coach and a counselor is appropriate. And so, I'm thinking out loud here. We could have maybe Shannon Herman come on the show next week and talk about an example of that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Not to steal her thunder, but her practice involves some interesting accountability and monitoring of behaviors that. That fit well with a coaching paradigm, but don't necessarily fit so well under a licensed counselor or licensed psychologist paradigm, just because it would involve behavioral observations and accountability and, let's say, public places and those things. So, but we'll
good point.
We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to that hopefully next week or sometime soon. And there are other I had a case where I was working with a person as a counselor and referred out to a coach, but that life coach was more of an academic skills coach, had the CPC certification and everything, but really worked with my adolescent client on the more academic skills, skill building, pacing yourself, study skills, and also some accountability, which takes place in the home. Now, I know people do counseling in the home, but certainly the coach was able to go into the home several days a week and do some very good, close, focused work. And then we had releases signed both ways to be able to communicate that. So it was really good. Another good example how that blended model worked with youth. I mean, it can also work with adults as well, but... Mm-hmm. The spirit of the conference at hand was a youth conference, so we wanted to maintain a youth focus. So, yeah, what do you think, Jenny, about all that?
I thought it was so exciting to be able to talk about the two together, the counseling and the coaching, and especially with you, Bruce, knowing that you have such strong background in the counseling and also you're a coach. So just to have your perspective, I felt comfortable that you could handle the counseling, talking about the counseling piece and how that works with coaching. So I thought it was such a great opportunity to introduce the concept of combining, not necessarily combining, but integrating. That's really a better a better term. And I felt like it was really well received. I felt like people really want to understand coaching and how it's different. And there's so many similarities. Sometimes it's difficult to separate them. Do you think?
Yeah, it can be. It can be. It just depends on where your perspective originated. You know, if you're kind of a layman, nothing wrong with being a layman too. I wish I was a layman, but believe me, I could live in bliss. If you're thinking, well, what is the difference? And it's incumbent upon, you know, the provider to kind of educate the consumer or your client as to what those differences are, you know. And I know with Shannon and others, paperwork is just very clear, you know, this is coaching, this is not counseling, this is not psychotherapy. And just being very clear sometimes, you know, with a pure coaching client, you know, that making that distinction very, very clear. So
how would you describe the difference of counseling and coaching?
Right. It's a little layup question. You know, a lot of times in counseling, we talk about past issues, things that have gone on in the past. Could be even trauma, could be the past diagnoses, past academic skills issues, past oppositional defiant, past substance use, you know, things in the past, and labels that are very, certainly more past oriented, maybe, and also more clinically oriented. Whereas in coaching, I think we're looking more toward the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing that with a more positive psychology framework to it. And also in coaching, our clients are way more empowered as to what the session will be about, what we're going to do with the session, you know, with today's, you know, what their goals are and those things. I think it's more, I think it's in many instances way more client focused and client driven than some traditional counseling models.
Mm-hmm. So the coaching client, they really have to be ready to take action outside of the sessions.
Well, that in theory, you know, most people, you know, water seeks its own level. I think that most people that are looking at coaching and asked to see a coach are ready to apply some effort, right? I mean, at least people apply to 24-hour fitness or whatever on New Year's Eve, at least, you know, do a couple of weeks of effort, you know what I mean, going into the next year, if not more. So, you know, there is that, I won't say expectation, but that strong likelihood that the person who is, you know, enlisting into a coaching paradigm is ready to do some kind of personal work. So, I think that's great. And it makes the lifting, if any, a lot less in terms of, you know, the assessment piece and what are some things we want to do moving forward. I think also differences in counseling and coaching are a lot of the assessments. You know, we talk about Strengths Finder and 360 interviews and other measures that have been used in the coaching paradigm that aren't necessarily used in a psychotherapy or a counseling paradigm. Now, that's not to say that they can't be, and they could be depending on the counselor. Okay, particularly if these are recognized, validated measurements and techniques. I mean, then of course they're available to be used with somebody who has a professional license. But you know, some of the Hogan and others, you know, that's just, some of those are more coachy or coaching type instruments. And again, I found them to be very effective and very elucidating or very, you know, I don't want to say revealing. That sounds a little bit harsh, but I mean, it's robust, there you go, in terms of gathering information about your clients. So I'm pleased.
Would you say that there's a different goal in the assessments when it comes to counseling versus coaching?
You know, from 5,000 feet, sometimes with assessments, we're in the traditional psychological assessments, we're looking for problems, right? We're looking for problem areas to fix. We want our clients to get better. Make no mistake about it. And the counseling profession kind of to the psychologist almost seems coachy. You know what I mean? Because the counselors were seemingly more positive and looking at vocational issues and those things.
Yeah.
And now the coaches are on the scene making counselors look more like psychologists. Which isn't a bad thing. I mean, now folks, you know, psychologists really is predicated on testing and measurement.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a background in clinical psychology, and let me tell you what, that was the first and nearly last stop of the bus with the intellectual and personality. I took a lot of neuropsych assessment and very, very useful things, very, very useful instruments, and absolutely, you know, love my psychological training, and it has just made me be a better counselor as well as a coach. But yeah, just again, the underpinnings of what we're looking for is different and generally more self-focused and a little bit more positive in a coaching sphere.
That's a really good point. So it seems to me, at least in my coaching, when I do an assessment and the assessments, I'm looking for example, in the life will assessment, some people call it a will of balance. I mean, I'm looking for their strengths as well as their areas that they want to grow, you know, the areas of growth. And so, because the strengths are going to help them reach their other goals. However they got their high scores in some of their areas of their life, they're probably going to use the same strengths to get the high scores in the areas of their goals, you know, the areas they want to improve. And so, and then the strengths finder, I'm looking for their strengths so I can leverage those in coaching. And I know you do that in counseling as well.
Sure.
You have to, it's a huge part of the psychotherapy is looking at what are the problem areas? Where are they stuck either in a diagnosis or in the past? Is that accurate?
Now say that last part again.
Like you're also looking like where are they stuck from either trauma in the past or a diagnosis that needs treatment?
Yeah. I mean, that is certainly a piece of a psychological, you know, evaluation and assessment and to see, you know, and again, I think we can get some sticking points in coaching assessments. We can get self-limiting thoughts, right, in coaching assessments as well, which then lead to those behavioral outcomes, right? So it depends on where are you in this chain. Are you in the behavior end of the chain, or are you at the thinking level part
Good
of the
point.
Chain,
yeah.
Kind of ipso facto before all the behavioral stuff ensues. So,
good point.
Yeah. That's why I think it's really fun to do this. I have a coaching client, a new client, this morning. Talked to and really had to, if you will, put on my coaching hat. Because this client had a lot of life-changing things going on concurrently within the last month, being engaged, nearing a mandatory retirement, enduring, suffering, and grieving the loss of a close loved one.
And, oh my gosh!
Some work issues. Negative valence. So it's like, whoa, you know, so man, you know, every kind of food group this person might be going through is being tested right now and challenged right now. And to, you know, kind of keep the coaching hat on and say, okay, well, what do you think, you know, what are some things that, you know, you're thinking you want to work on, and what if you were to prioritize some of these, what would you do and why would you do it? And, you know, had great answers for everything. You know, well, first I do this and here's why, and maybe second and here's why. We kind of made a list and kind of did some vision casting and goal sheet stuff. And you know what? I think it's going to be great, because I don't think I'm missing out on anything. I don't think that, you know, oh yeah, if I was able to do some woo-woo counseling on them, I could do, but you know what I mean? We're just going to have to take this, in a way that's inside of a, you know, inside of a scope of duties, professional scope, if you will, you know.
Yeah, that's a great example, because they didn't come to you with any kind of psychological diagnosis. It's really life and how do I make this turn out the way I want?
Exactly. And then, you know, what will be some steps to it, and
yeah,
and setting some priorities and did a little bit of assessment and uncovered, you know, a couple of things that, you know, this person may want to wish to address, and kind of left that up as an advised item. Just
so,
because again, keeping that coaching hat on, we're not telling our clients what to do or saying that we're the authority. I mean, they're the authority, and we're gonna work inside of their authority, you know.
But you're working with them in a thought-provoking way, which provokes thought. Maybe that's something to look at.
Right. Hey, mind if I weigh in on something? Sure. So you're kind of asking permission, you know, to do that, and, you know, and do it with qualification and measure, you know, and so I know some coaches, and this is an interesting point, I think some coaches are very, I mean, like, oh, Bruce, you shouldn't have done that, where you should have waited at least 6 months before you raised your hand and said, hey, can I ask you a question? And, you know, so that, I don't know what you think about that, but I mean, so there are some coaches that are very, 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 you know, let them drive it, you'll get to it, just be patient, you know what I mean, which is true. But this isn't Freudian analysis. We're not waiting for that 105th session.
No. And I think that's your style. Your style is being direct, and you can see, you have so much experience in the clinical, with your clinical background, that you can see these things so clearly. And so it's, you know, what I've learned anyway about coaching is asking permission to share an observation and whatever they want to do with that. So it, to me, it's really, I think every coach has their style. Your style is probably, my guess would be your style is very technical, very insightful, and very direct, because that's who you are.
I mean, over the years, I think it's been less direct, but and that's a good thing too, believe me. I think I've heard you say it, and others on our show say it, and Cindy DeFerdinand, you know, say it, and everybody say, hey, good coaches ask good questions, you know, and man, that is so true. How that is how that is. That's just it about coach training, is getting training on when to ask what questions and how to ask questions and how to follow the lead of your client with either supportive questioning, clarification questioning, probing questioning, with all the different types of questions that you can then execute on as you kind of follow your client through. So, so that is where, you know, I think is, you know, so much fun in the area of personal communication that, you know, it takes a while, and I'm not, look, I've been doing it a long time. Doesn't mean I'm good at it. I certainly, mumble sometimes, and people are like, what did you just say? But not.
No.
But certainly, yeah, that's one of the great fun things about coaching is being striving to be on top of your game as an interpersonal mm-hmm. communicator, at least with your clients.
And we really do have to go with the flow with them, like you were talking about. It's very dynamic because where are they going mm-hmm. in the conversation? And so how do we ask the questions to help them get where they want to go?
Right.
It's an art and a science, isn't it?
It is. It is. And folks, there is science to this. And I didn't want to, you know, for all the scientist practitioners and Boulder model people out there and more psychologically minded people, a lot of those coaching assessments are validated and have research that, you know, I go on and on about the StrengthsFinder 2.0, the Gallup data, the millions of people in those data samples and how robust that is. I'm not saying that I like the Myers-Briggs. It's just so overdone. However, right? Because, you know, it has been so done that there is a plethora, if you will, of research, of legitimate research on that instrument and in what ways that is a valid instrument to use as part of a, you know, getting to know somebody picture. So. So it is. It's art and science rolled into one.
I had my past professional background was sales, business to business sales, and we had this mm-hmm. amazing sales trainer that was independent. The guy, I think back in the like 90s, he was paid about $50,000. An incident when he would come and train us. He was from LA and he would come to Dallas and he was big time. The biggest thing I learned from him was questions. He taught us that the person asking questions is the person in control of the conversation.
Right.
And so he taught us that skill in sales, that if you're asking the questions, you're gathering the information that you need to close the deal. Well, it's really true with our clients. If we're asking the right questions, then we're really gathering the information and helping the client find that information they need to reach their goals.
Right. Right. Absolutely. You know?
And yeah.
Yeah. And so it is a way of, you're right. It is a way of taking, I don't want to say control, you know, we're just taking information and gathering information so that we can be the most effective, I don't want to say change agent, but whatever, you know, provider of service that we can be. And so those questions are everything.
And so we're, you know, as coaches, we're responsible for the process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the questions come in. It's not about control of the client or anything. It's really about that we're responsible for the coaching process of helping them get what they want. And one way to do that is to ask those powerful questions.
Yeah. Look, a physician or a nurse about a medical condition is going to ask questions about somebody's medical history. A police detective is going to ask questions to a grave detail on everything that happened, you know, immediately before and leading up to the instant offense that they're, you know, investigating, right? Those detectives are going to ask a lot of questions, and that's their job, right? That's how crimes get solved, is by inquiries. And so, I think, you know, the art of questioning, or how to pose questions to clients is very, very important and a huge part of what we do as coaches.
It actually can be great in relationships too.
Can be, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Let me get this straight. You wanted me to take out the trash? Right. Before I did this thing.
Or okay. The Dr. Phil question. How's that working for you?
Oh, no. I'll get a big fat.
Yeah. I don't use that one.
No.
That doesn't work for me. That question does not work for me.
That'll result in some negative
right.
stuff.
Yeah, defensive. But some people can pull that off, but that's not a question that I use. But it is, asking questions is a great skill because mm-hmm. it involves conversation with someone. So it really is a great skill to have in relationships also.
Well, it is. It is, especially... I was going to say in the beginning, of course, when you're trying to get to know somebody, right? That's kind of that diagnostic phase. But I also think mm-hmm. that I love visiting family members, and I have some cousins, I guess you might say, sister-in-law's kids, and they're girls, and. Teenage girls or young tween and teen, and I have two boys, so I'm always at a loss. But one of the things that gives me comfort and joy is that, well, then what happened next? Oh my gosh, well, what was she wearing? And then I'm just saying, well, who are your friends? Well, okay, now put them on a piece of paper, like who is your closest friend? Oh man, these girls, they go to town. Number one is this person, and here's why. And number two is this person. Mm-hmm, really? Well, tell me more. Boy, they just, going to town. And meanwhile, I've done that with a couple other teenage clients, and boy, they just gave so much data there, and just get them talking about their friends and like a significant incident at school.
Oh, and they think Uncle Bruce is awesome.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I can sure it's better than Disney Channel.
Oh yeah,
listening to them is better than me listening to Disney Channel or
sure.
some YouTuber on how to apply makeup or something. Like, my gosh, dude, I'm just a YouTuber. Like, what is that? But anyway, these are the icons, pillars of information for these Generation Z, I guess, is what these new ones coming up. So,
boy,
they are definitely into the YouTubers. So,
For sure. That's how we learn today.
Yeah. Khan Academy has something on how to be a coach. Just kidding.
Oh, man, that's funny. Well, I think it'd be a great idea to have Shannon on real soon because she's also like you, therapist and coach. And what she's done is segued into coaching
because full-time.
Mm-hmm. A specialty. And, that's absolutely. Another thing is that your style, from what I understand anyway, the style of counseling is also determined by your specialty. Like your specialty. Some of it, because if you have very fairly high functioning clients in your practice and you're focused, say, on maybe you're a career counselor, for example, and they're fairly high functioning, then you might use a lot of coaching techniques even as a counselor in a counseling role.
Right. I was kind of thinking of another paradigm where I was involved as a coach for a major, major airline. I think I still am. They mailed me something the other day about tax forms and stuff. Anyway, this is a little paper I have. Anyway, it's been a minute. But with those folks, where it was, this person and perhaps their union and perhaps management and really kind of having a didactic looking teaching offering, right? Mm-hmm. That we could call coaching versus, let's say, remediation or quote training, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't have actually have that negative label, to be somehow remediated in some life skill doesn't necessarily sound good to some of these professionals, right?
Right.
Maybe slipped on a banana peel, made a mistake or whatever. But it has to be addressed. That mistake has to be addressed. And how can we, or companies, or I think companies, are tasked with how can we address this issue that happened inside our company and get a good response, not only from the perpetrator, but from human resources and from possibly perceived other perceived individuals that were affected by an individual's conduct, okay?
Okay.
How can we do that and have that not look like it's punitive? Is that something that the company will pay for? Is that something that the person should pay for out of pocket? You know, what does that look like? And so, man, that's another, you know, man, if I had an HR background or more of an HR background, but certainly, I mean, I'd be, you know, calling on these companies to look at coaching as a solution for some problematic situations that occur in the workplace.
And especially people that are willing.
Right.
You know, they're key employees that are willing to make changes.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That are willing to make changes. And look, there's various drivers for people who are willing to make changes. Like, hey, you know, I really want to do this because I want to change and be a better person. Or, hey, I'm retirement eligible and blank, blank, and I want to hit my retirement date. And I want to be able to receive the benefits that I've worked so hard for the last 20, 30 plus years for. Right.
Right.
And now, you know, if this person finds themselves in a pickle, and this is a perfect way of perhaps, you know, coaching through an issue or a topic may be good to do that. And so that said, that's another avenue for coaching. But number two is, here's the difference between that and psychotherapy, is that some of that more formal human resource coaching, at least in my opinion, has been fairly didactic, you know. I mean, like teaching skills and reading and talking about what has been read and what's their sense of, you know, the reading assignment and how does that apply, you know, moving forward. And so I think and that's not mentoring, right? Mentoring is different than teach, you know, than, you know, mentoring is like, here, do what I did, right? This is what I've done and you can do what I've done. Well, that doesn't necessarily fit in that paradigm. So yeah, so things, sometimes coaching goes well with the didactic teaching types of programs. It's not psychotherapy. It's not counseling, but you are teaching things, right? You see, see coaches writing concepts on a whiteboard and, you know.
That's true.
This,
It is true.
While there are therapeutic gains, just because there's therapeutic gains doesn't mean it's therapy. Otherwise, every AA and NA house would be sued for practicing psychotherapy. They're not practicing psychotherapy. This is a 12-step program that has traditions. And, you know, we have AA and Al-Anon and open meetings and closed meetings. And we have 12 steps and 12 traditions. And this is our ritual. And this is what we do. And this is what's been found helpful by many that are experiencing, you know, A, alcoholism, and B, you know, recovering from alcoholism. And so
it has therapeutic benefits.
You bet it's very therapeutic. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Staying away from alcohol once you've been either A, diagnosed, and or B, a self-professed, one is too much and a thousand's never enough. And
like me.
Okay. I'm not pointing fingers here, man. I'm just saying. Right? So it's, man, is AA therapy? Well, you know, define therapy, not to sound like Clinton, but, you know, what is that? Well, it has a therapeutic gain. Okay, well, is coaching therapy? Well, no, it's coaching. Does it have a therapeutic gain? Depends on the individual. So it is a little, you know.
It's like saying, is shopping therapy? No, but it has therapeutic gain.
Yeah, it can. It can have therapeutic gain, you know, as in, if I go if I have nothing in the refrigerator and I get some milk and some bread, then you bet you there's a therapeutic gain to be able to eat.
Yeah.
I just, you know, love how the you know, it's, it isn't clear, right? But it's clear enough that,
yeah,
that there are boundaries between these disciplines. And
I kind of picture it like two circles that overlap each other at a certain point.
The old Venn diagram type of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. It's all good. We're a team, man. We're a team over here.
That's right. We're a team. And so that's kind of how I picture it, because coaching does also deal with the past as far as how it relates to the future, how it blocks us from getting what we want in life and being our best. And also, we look at the path to what we call to do that appreciative inventory and find those positive anchors on how did we accomplish things in the past? When have we been here before with a challenge like this, and what did we do? How did we do that?
You know, that is nice. So in other words, like counseling, you are looking into the past. However, in this instance, you're looking into the past with a positive, you know, what positive skill and strength did you do to get through or utilize to get through that moment in life or get to that, yeah.
Yeah, and if you remember when we had Dr. Gardner on and she mm-hmm. used me as the client right. about the Christmas thing. And so she asked me about Christmas experiences in the past, and she was basically helping me identify a limiting belief about my family Christmas experience.
Mm-hmm.
And once I identified that limiting belief, I was able to shift to an empowering belief, an authentic belief, what I really wanted out of my Christmas experience with my family. And it totally changed how I approached Christmas, by the way.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's a great example. She was helping me connect the past with my current limiting belief so I could change it.
Yes. So you could, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Bringing up that awareness and, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
you were rehearsing that one.
and that sounds therapeutic as all get out, man. That's
it does.
Whoa, that's black belt therapy there, dude.
I know. See, that is the gray area, isn't it?
That is CBT on steroids, man, because now you think about Christmas in a new way. You've identified cognitive distortions.
Yeah, and guess what I did? Mm-hmm. I changed my goal from making sure everybody had a great time to doing my part to have a great time and provide an environment for them to have a great time. I created this really cool craft that we all did together, or it was optional. People could do it, but I printed out pictures of each person from the year. I creeped on them on Facebook and I printed pictures of them that were really cool and memorable and had them in an envelope with their names on them. And then I gave them to them. And then I had like these wood slices where they could do like decoupage of memories of the year. And they loved it. They all just thought it was so cool. And not all of them did the craft, but they all looked at the pictures of themselves and they thought that was really cool.
Man,
yeah,
almost like art therapy. And
it was
stuff, you know.
It was art. It was art therapy.
How were you able to let go? I'm just curious. So, that's great. So you willfully said, you know what? I am going to focus on providing a container or an opportunity for people. Sounds like prison. That's what we do in prison.
I know.
Anyway, just kidding.
we
provide opportunities
for you to rehabilitate yourself.
Yeah. We ain't gonna rehabilitate you, but you have the choice. Anyway, sorry. Let's go back to Christmas.
Yeah.
Prison.
Not
Christmas
quite prison, there. But yeah.
No. Okay. Just kidding. So through this process, you are now willfully investing, allowing yourself to invest in the thought that I'm going to do what I can to provide my guests to have a blank experience, a good experience at my Christmas gathering, right? Is that the
yes.
versus taking on responsibility for them feeling good about the Christmas event?
Yes, because there was anxiety around opening gifts because some people don't like to exchange gifts in my family and some people do. And so how do we distract from that and, you know, honor everyone, but not, I can't please everyone, but I can honor the wishes.
Honor.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So I had gifts for people for them to take home, but we didn't exchange there and open gifts.
So getting back to my original question, did you see how taking on that responsibility for their feelings was an exercise in futility? And you went,
yes.
Oh.
Yeah, right. Okay. I mean, there's no way that I can will everyone to have a good time because everybody has a different idea of what a good time is, a different definition, a different vision for that. And so what I can do is create a loving environment where I really show people how I feel they're special, how I, you know, I show them that they are special to me and give them an opportunity to do something that's memorable for the year. And so it was something that honored them and their memories and gave us something to do together. And so my mom and dad, they didn't really want to do the craft, but they picked out pictures and asked someone else to make the craft for them. And that was fun. Yeah.
See, it's content and process, you know, the content of the activity, but the process of just being together and looking at the pictures of yourself and being with everybody else. So what a nice layered activity that was. Ooh,
yeah.
How exciting.
Now the limiting belief is, do I have to do that every year?
Like, no, then get a bucket of chicken. Like, first man, just throw it up. Throw it in the corner. Y'all go to it. Yeah, man.
Do I have to top it next year? Or
yeah,
what?
Man. Paper plates, paint me a plastic forks. Yeah,
I'm
man,
going dude, out of town like, next year.
That's it. Yep. Canceled due to lack of interest this year. So,
right.
Oh, man.
It was amazing how a coach, just someone other than me,
right,
ask me some questions.
Right.
She's objective. Yep. I'm not. I'm in the middle of it for years of this, you know, expectations. And I was just expecting that it would be chaos. And she just asked me a couple of powerful questions and it shifted my mindset.
Awesome.
And it opened my mind to even think about doing that. I wouldn't have even thought about that if she hadn't asked those questions.
Man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so just like you said, just the power of some good clarification questions was able to get you. She didn't shifted you. You shifted you. But the prompting of those questions got you to the point where you could make those decisions. And isn't that just so much more meaningful for you rather than somebody like me going, yeah, well, Jenny, just that's it. You're pissing in the wind there. You might as well,
you might as well cancel Christmas.
Yeah. And you're just kind of. So, I wouldn't say that, by the way. But,
no, I
wouldn't. But that is a great example on how that is. And even though the wheel exercise and people really ranking what's important to them in their lives and moving forward. And remember in our presentation, that younger married lady talked about, well, remember she was in the back? What she was saying?
Yes. In the workshop. So that was a very interesting perspective because this is a young lady that is sort of at the beginning of her adult life experience. And so she's doing the Wheel of Balance, which has 8 categories for those who haven't ever seen it. And it's like career, finances, physical well-being, your fun, your spiritual life, you know, those things, all, you know, your living environment, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think she kind of ranked herself sort of low in a lot of these areas. I know. And I felt sad. If she was my client, I would challenge that because it's not about how much she's accomplished. It's how filled she feels at this point in her life in those areas.
And I just want to slap her on the back and go, man, you are not a narcissist. Well, good for you. And I really appreciate it. I was kind of feeling it, man, because I could just feel the brutal honesty. The way I felt she was framing it is like, hey, you know, I'm young, right? So I'm young in my career, if you will, in these spheres. So I'm not going to give myself, you know, all these glowing ratings because, you know, honestly, right, I'm just getting off the ground. And man, that takes a special kind of person with some wisdom and discernment and humility to say that. You know what I mean? I didn't see yourself as beating yourself up wearing a horsehair shirt and flogging yourself per se at all. But I really like the kind of analytic humility, like, okay, but you know, I would say, hey, no, man, you know, you're young, but you really just kind of,
you're doing great.
but relative to yourself and other young people, relative to myself and other young people, then I think I'm pretty good compared to other, whatever, 27 year olds or whatever. Okay, then, see what I mean? And just kind of get her to drag in her her population generalizability, her external validity function.
It's a great exercise.
Yeah, it is. Man, to me, I'm so glad you did it for numerous reasons, but certainly that one, so we could get that contrast, you know.
Yeah.
Another person said family was very important, and that's that, and if I can't have that, then the young woman in the back really kind of putting her take on things. So it just shows you how rich and colorful, you know, that data is. Mm-hmm. Even though it is kind of self-report data, it's just very telling in a good way too. You know, I'm just like, oh man, you know, this is the kind of frame that this person thinks out of. Just think that I was pretty excited about that. So yeah, folks, that's why you want to, if you're interested in becoming a coach, get training and do it, because it's such a natural process, and you can learn a lot about yourself, but learn a lot about coaching, obviously, and learn a lot about, I think, learning a lot about life and the processes of life too, in a whole other way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've amazing.
Yeah.
How powerful we are to create in our life, and we forget that sometimes.
We do.
Yeah.
And speaking of, we're coming up on the witching moment, coming up on 50 minutes after the hour.
Yeah.
So it was a quick show. It's good that we got to talk to our listeners, just us, kind of peek inside the heads of Bruce and Jenny and what went on and kind of compare and contrast things.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good interplay we're glad to share that with you. We hope that you found some takeaways or something that kind of spurred some interest for you. So, anyway, the way you can contact us on the show, we have a Facebook page, Concierge Coaches Show. Also, I have a website for me, conciergecoach.net. And how can folks contact you, Jenny?
And that's the best way for me as well is jhubconsulting.com, J-H-U-B, consulting.com. And if you want the Wheel of Life exercise, just reach out to Bruce or me, and we'll be happy to send that to you.
Yes, we can send that out to you. And also, folks, don't forget, our shows are archived at the LA Talk Radio, LA Talk Radio site, or it's latalkradio.com/content/concierge-coaches-show. You can find us on channel 2 as one of the program offers. And also, also very important, and thanks to LA Talk Radio and our producer, we are on iTunes. And we're going to be loading up some new iTunes here shortly. I know our producer wants to hear that finally, because that's more my thing. And we're going to have, you can always go to iTunes, Google us on iTunes, and all our shows are there free. So you don't have to pay to listen to our show. That's already done for you. It's our way of paying forward so you can you can listen to the show for free, so it's really cool. It's just another way to do it.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, then that'll be a wrap. Thank you for listening to our show this week, and we'll be back next week with a guest, a half guest, or just never know what we're going to do here on this show. And so we'll see you at that time. So from all of us here at LA Talk Radio, have a great week on the Concierge Coaches Show. Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.